Let's see here. Where's the show? Where's the show button? Here we go. We're ready. One and a two. Spaceship motorboat.
Oh, yes, my friends. It's the Sharon Sleeve Show.
Take my hat, take my coat, take my gloves, I'll take a cup. Take my money, but I'm begging, please don't take my shoes. Take my house, take my clothes, take my wife, lighten up my load. Take my feet, you can take my toes, but please don't take my shoes.
From the downtowniest part of New York City, the city that never sleeps, the city that never weeps, the city where nothing keeps. Coming to you live on WCJD 90.2, New York, high atop the Empire State Building.
Way up there. Is there anyone that thinks that I'm at the top of the Empire State Building? Oh, I hope so. Because here I am, right at the very top of the Empire State Building in New York. It's very cold up here. I have three blankets, three Empire State Building blankets. They hand them out right at the very top to all those who make it. Not many have. I'm one of the few. The proud. The three blanketers. It's a club. You get a drink, funny hat, three blankets. And then you get to do whatever show you like. The only problem, you can never, ever get down. But the blankets are a consolation, I must say. Several of us up here with our blankets and our radio programs. Now you'd think, with just three, four, five, I can't see all of them were sort of spread around. You'd think there'd be some camaraderie, some attention to each other's programs, maybe some feedback. Why not? When we can't be doing radio shows all day. But no, we're very, very separate and isolated in our little radio world. So there's a fellow just a few feet away. I hear him mumbling for several hours in the middle of the night. I have no idea what he's saying. Now he's sleeping now. If he wakes, he might look over. He has no interest in my stories. No interest at all. Now, there are times that I prepare for this show. I did not last time. I don't think I did the time before. I won't do a whole catalogue of them because I don't know. But I wonder if there's any difference. If there's value to preparation. Do you ever wonder that? Do you ever wonder if the thing that you've prepared yourself 4 or 6 hours for, you've done all this work, and then it happens, the event, the presentation, the meeting, the speech, the show from the Empire State Building. It happens. And it's all right. But what would have happened if you didn't prepare? What if it turned out that not preparing was actually the best way to do it? Which is, I think, what this whole Empire State Building experience is all about. I think whoever it was that came up with the idea of the Three Blanket Club, with an internet connection and a high-quality microphone and a soundboard, was onto something. It's very difficult to prepare. I see some of these fellows up here marching around, trying to collect the sound of pigeons, trying to interview each other, as though any of us know what's happening down in the real world. I heard someone the other day asking questions about Nixon. He's been up here for many years. Of course, that's one of our problems, is we don't share up here. So he was not disabused of anything, any notion about Nixon's whereabouts, whyabouts, whether he was even alive or not. I don't know if Nixon's alive. I doubt it. Nixon had a very unusual experience in the world. Very surfing-like experience. Up and down. And then at last he was slowly coasting his way up, building his reputation, enormous book by enormous book. Every year or so he'd put out a massive dictionary full of thoughts that I believe he stole from Henry Kissinger. Or at least, he asked Henry for some thoughts. Henry, what do you think I should write about in my next book that rescues and restores my reputation at least to a limited degree? So, Roy and I are getting close to putting our first album out, maybe March or April or something like that. And for a long time we didn't know what to call ourselves. We still don't. Naming things is very difficult, unless you accidentally have named it, and then you can be very pleased. So, for example, the Adam's Motion in the Void was a name that I had before I knew what I was doing. So I had it, and I was running around town with it in my pocket, as it were. That's something we don't talk about much, is the fact that we do have pockets, brain pockets, where we store things for later use. We don't know what they're going to be useful for, stories or jokes or ideas, inventions, other things. So the moment I read about Adam's Motion in the Void and a philosophical treatise by Lucretius, I knew it was something that I couldn't stop thinking of that, Adam's Motion and the Void. It kept rolling around in this circular bowling alley in my brain, getting strikes. Atoms, it's a bowling ball. Motion down the wooden surface, void, as it hits the pins and then everything dissolves. That's my favorite part about bowling. The dissolution, the strike, and then it all goes away. And then it's magically reset. But my favorite part is when it's all gone. And you look down at the end of that very enigmatic bowling lane that it feels like you're not allowed down there. It's trespassing. If you've ever walked down a bowling alley lane, it feels as though the police are going to come running out and throw you down on the floor and take you away. There are spaces like that we aren't allowed to go. It's brightly lit. If you go down the bowling alley, the further you get to the pins, the brighter it is. It's as though you're entering into some other different movie land experience. Difficult to explain to those of you who've never ventured into the mysterious, dangerous, close to the pin part of the lane. Close to the pin part of the lane. Close to the pin part of the lane. It's hard to play music when there's other nothingy music playing. So What have we got today? Let's, so what we don't know, if you have a name for Roy and I, what we should call ourselves, please let me know. At the moment, we are calling ourselves what I call everything, what I kept in my pocket so long ago. We're calling our band, and some will dislike this, Atoms, Motion and the Void. I don't know. We have to call it something, and I can't think of anything. And that is that. Why don't we play? We'll have... I don't think I've played this. This is a new song that Roy's put together. So why not play it? Then after that, talk some more, and after that, a walk in the woods, or wherever it was. And then other things that follow. So this new song, what is this called? I think this is called The Man Who Mistook a Stick for a Bird, or something along those lines. Once upon a time was a bird who just stood on a branch of a tree in the flush of the wood. Never flew round as every bird should. It never went off, he just did what it done. One day I went over to have a small word. I climbed up the tree, Lucifer said, and became the next story you almost have heard, called the man who mistook an old stick for a bird. Now once upon a tree was a man who was me, at least for a while I thought I was he, but he weren't where I was, it was us, it was we. I said I thought I was you, he said I thought you were me. We each shouted out, we like a small word. We broke off the stick we mistook for the bird, and became the next story you almost have heard, called the we of the tree broke the stick of the bird. Piano piece now playing is by Arvo Pärt. It's probably one of my favorite pieces of the last 20 years, 10 years, 3 years, 17 years. Last week, Spiegel, Im Spiegel. I read a curious word recently, a Japanese word, and I can't remember what it was, what the Japanese says. I know the translation. It's magi, wabi, yabi, ibi, something with two four-letter words with a hyphen in between. Yebo, dagis, I don't know. But it means joy and grief together. So in Japan you can experience this sense of things being joyful and with a touch of grief. We don't have that. We do have to say I feel joyful and grief at the same time. Here I am over here, joy-griefing. but I believe that much of what my sensibility is directed to and from is wabi-sabi. That mixture of what seems to be the living point. They are very joy and grief, neither of them being as massive as we imagine, both being quite simple and quite close. Joy being almost a light pleasure in being alive and an acknowledgement and awareness of being alive, looking at the clouds or walking down the street, and simply not having a bad time, aware that one is alive and that it feels, just the walking and the breathing and the looking and the hearing, it feels. And then the grief being a slight and subtle sense of temporariness. And that is a mood that I have had in my body most of my life. Now, of course, there are times when I'm not feeling wabi-sabi. Not always joy griefing my way to the apocalypse. And much of my time is spent busy and not working and all the things that keep you from those moments when you wake up and you think, oh yes, here we are. I am a person alive on this planet for a short while. Wara Sika. And this song, this Spiegel im Spiegel, Bhagavo part, to me contains that. A lot of the music I like has that. I turn down the wind and turn up the Arvo. Now, strangely, this song, it can sound profoundly sad. It has a hanging, beautiful hanging quality. It's so simple. But it does take you to a place of quietness from which you can revive. So I have gotten very sad while listening to it, and then I've also gotten very wabi. Not just wabi, but also sabi. So someone is close to what it is. Or I should say, welcome to often. Not often, as though often pronounced very well. But if he's still there in the chat room, he's the supplier of the radiographs, I believe, from number 43, 42, 41. One thing I fear is repetition. I don't keep track of any of the things I talk about, and sometimes I plan on, when I do plan on talking about certain things. For example, I may someday speak about bowling alleys again in the future. I hope I don't. I wish I wrote it down that I had a thought about bowling alleys and that experience of trespass and going down them, so we don't need to go down that alley again. The alley again. That repetition that I just did reminds me of the walk that I took the other day, which I remembered an old friend who was a great repeater. So why don't we go to that? If there's anybody that wants to call, I can try to turn the Skippy on. I don't like Skype as a word, or Twitter. I don't want to say those things. I don't want to say Skippy either. There's no right way to it. So here's a bit of a walk. Be back in a moment. I held a meteorite the other day. I also held some fragments of Roman pottery, some old coins. The meteorite was large, about the size of an orange, and very heavy. I asked what it was made of. I was told it was mostly iron. I asked if there was any exotic, unknown material within. Something from the distant galaxies. No answer. I held some Roman pottery fragments. I held a small top of an oil dispenser and some other little corners of things, pieces. Nothing from the Roman time was intact, but it was a bracelet. They said a child's bracelet. This is a child's bracelet. There are two metal pieces that were very small. It's for the circumference, I suppose, of a child's wrist, but when they said bracelet, I at first thought maybe the Romans were very small people. And then when I commented on the size, they said, oh, no, child, a child's bracelet. And then I wondered, well, how do they know? Isn't it possible that the Romans were pygmies, tiny, littler than we thought? Like movie stars. Movie stars are often, this is what I hear, I have never experienced this, but those who I have come in contact with, who are familiar with the world of the cinematic star, said two things. First, movie stars never look in real life what they look like on the screen. And that's not just the makeup. It's almost a feeling that there's something wrong. And it's not that you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm looking at Drew Barrymore without makeup. It's something else. Something else feels completely wrong about it. All of a sudden, this person who you've held deeply in your imagination, it doesn't matter how flimsy a creature they are, is before you. And for whatever reason, I suppose nature, their head is very narrow and their eyes are too far apart. and they're 2 feet shorter than you thought, and their dimensions feel wrong. Their shoulders are tight and pushed back. They look like people who look like movie stars, but not the stars themselves. Which is what I suppose I'm saying in a roundabout way. I believe that the Romans were like that. They were small. They don't look like we think they looked. Or I suppose what I'm saying is that our expectations really have nothing to do with anything. There is imaginary is, whatever we like to say, has no other basis. Sometimes we imagine things that aren't real, sometimes we imagine things that are real. And we always get discouraged, disappointed, even frustrated and sometimes angry when those things that we imagine in the real world, for example, that great moment when we visit Tom Cruise, we imagine something. And then, what happens? Both shoes fall off the bottom, goes right through the universe, and Tom Cruise is nothing but a small, narrow, little puppet boy you could put in your back pocket, run off, and join the circus. By the way, if you ever go along telling a story, making a point, all of a sudden you lose your way. It's a trick I learned. Just take the point that you're making, whatever it is, stick it in your back pocket and run off and join the circus. It will save you. It thoroughly confuses and at the same time entertains your listeners. They don't know exactly what's happening. There's a bit of sleight of hand. It's a little bit of a word of brain. Cold night, stars, no moon. Long, long, long ago, I used to have a friend, Mitchell Mayne. Mitchell Mayne was a great admirer of the heavens. Always wanted to be an astronomer. Always wanted to get a telescope. Never got a telescope. Never learned a thing about the sky. But he loved it. He loved the sky. And on days when the sky was particularly glistening, he would come and get me, and we would go down to this place that he said was the most dark place in the area, and we would sit and look up at the stars. And he called such nights bright triangle nights. He would come and say, "Show when the bright triangles are out." And I never exactly understood why, but he would point them out to me. If you look up often on a beautiful starry night, you see lots of triangular constellations, not constellations, but arrangements of stars. And for whatever reason, these very clear triangles held some rich meaning to Mitchell Mayne. And tonight, I imagine if he's still alive, Mitchell Mayne is out, looking up at the bright triangles. And if he's not, I'll call across the land to him now. Mitchell Mayne, the bright triangles are out, my friend. the bright triangles around. Mitchell Main, how long did you cry? How long did you silence the radio? Mitchell Main, a song such a creep. I used to sing him a song, and I knew him as playing music. This old bar, broken down place, and Mitchell Main would come in. That's how we met. He would drink sometimes in the afternoons, right before I would start my music. And the first time I met him, he was a double talker, a repeater, someone who said things twice. So first time I saw him, he came over, he asked me if I played requests, I said no, and then he asked me my name, and from politeness I asked him his, and he said, Mitchell Main, Mitchell Main. And at once I began playing a Mitchell Main song. And it was a delightful friendship, a double-up friendship, because he said everything twice. It seemed like the second time he said things, they deepened into me. I was always constantly wondering about the value of repetition, and even in his company I myself began repeating the things I just said, as though to give them an extra layer, an extra coating. It was as though they became bold. As you emboldify texts on your computer screen, you make them bold. It's as though there are two values of the same word, same sentence, same thought. Same thought, same thought. This kind of emphasis. I don't know if he ever said anything meaningful at all, but it felt as though he did. From all those doublings. Oh, Mitchell Main, Mitchell Main. Music, by the way, at the end, you'll never guess unless you know. It was done by Mr. Beck, or not Jeff Beck, just regular Beck. No Mr., not Doctor, just Beck. Beck. And the music is Philip Glass. Beck has done some remix of Philip Glass music, along with several others. I don't know much about the album. That particular track is 20 minutes long, and it is very beautiful, very mysterious, and it moves all around from that piano, electronica, to dance, beat music, and all different places. Very unusual and worth listening to, and it has a number name, 63 to 72. If you're interested in it, if you liked it, search for Beck and Philip Glass, and you'll find it in an instant. In an instant. Mitchell Mayne would say, in an instant. It occurs to me there must be some brand of professional that uses repetition like that as a tool of the trade. And I'm sure in the circles of... What are those... Toastmasters, those gentlemen who practice giving toasts, go into the territories of rhetoric and presentation and gesture. I'm sure the repetition, it may even have a name. Though if they listen to each other, they might focus in on something and say, you know what, Tony, I like what you're saying there at the end, but I really, really think you should give it an SL. Oh, you think I should? An SL. All right, I will. I love terminology, and I love small worlds that have their own language, a club of some kind that develops its secret codes, its verbal secret handshakes. I always wish that I could be a member of such clubs and not feel a sense of silliness in the engagement of such made-upness. So my relationship to the make-believe is curious. I love it, I yearn for it, I live in it occasionally, and yet there are these intolerances I have, these inabilities to enter it. In those very places where I love, as the language. If I was a toastmaster, I would be hard-pressed to say SL. I would simply say, you should repeat that at the end, Peter. That would be a better effect or a good effect. And Peter might say, you mean do an SL? And perhaps pressed, I might say, yes, Peter, an SL. But I wish I could go into that without such wabi-sabi. I've never played a filthy song, a dirty song, but we're going to play one now, straight from Scotland, from the admittedly not exactly Scottish folk singer Ewan McCall. Hide the children and the chickens. For here it is.
The maid gaed to the Melbourne echt, hey, hey, say want, and the maid gaed to the Melbourne echt, and he say want, and she swore to be all the stars a breath, that she should hear corn ground, she should hear corn ground, melon mulcher free. Then out and came the miller's man, hey, hey, say want, and out and came the miller's man, he say want, and he said he'd do the best he can, for to get our corn ground, for to get our corn ground, mullen mulcher free. He put his hand about her neck, hey, hey, say want, and he put his hand about her neck, hey, say want, and he flung her down upon a sack, and there she got her corn ground, there she got her corn ground, mullen mulcher free. When all the rest get to their play, hey, hey, say want, and when all the rest get to their play, he say want, and she sighed and said, and witnessed he, because she'd got her corn ground, because she'd got her corn ground, mullen mulcher free. When 9 months were past and gain, hey, hey, say want, and when 9 months were past and gain, he say want, and she, this lassie had a brawl at bairn for getting o'er corn ground, getting o'er corn ground, mullen mulcher free. ar med ar bid ar casted ud. Hey, hey, se wantan, ar med ar bid ar casted ud. Hey, se wanted she. It was the mellar's dusty clute for getting no our corn ground, getting no our corn ground, mullen mulcher free. Our feather bid our keep it in. Hey, hey, say wantan, our feather bid our keep it in. Hey, say wantan, he. It was the chief of our ken for getting our corn ground, getting our corn ground, mull and mulcher free.
Our feather bid her keep it in. Hey, hey, say wantan. I've never known what exactly that song is about. There seems to be some old-timey euphemisms at play. But who knows? It could have been about something completely different. Ewan McCall was born in England. He bears a resemblance in some ways to Bob Dylan. In some ways not, but in his own sort of made-upness, his a leap of self-invention, and then he was much more political, though. Bob Dylan was political in a way that I find inscrutable. He was an enigmatic being, Bob Dylan, whereas Ewan McCall was much more of a card-carrying member of the Red Party, although I believe later in his life he became disenchanted with it. But he was one, Ewan McCall, was one of those persons who mixed politics, theatre, and music, and radio as well. He created some programs on the BBC, early programs, and I believe in the 50s and 60s, that were at the time quite remarkable and revolutionary. And if you're listening closely to that song, you would have heard a woman singing here and there, not much. That was his wife, Peggy Seeger. It was Pete Seeger's sister. Pete Seeger, who's still alive. He's several thousand years old. I believe Peggy Seeger is also still alive. Ewan McCall is not. Ewan McCall is probably best known for some of the songs that other people did, of covers that others did of his work. Dirty Old Town became a kind of a classic. Something that Roberta Flack did too, what was that one? I can't remember right now. One thing that enraged Ewan McCall for many years, I think he was angry for as long as he lived from the moment this happened, but he was a great keeper and cultivator and collector of old folk songs. So he would go to the old sea towns and collect and write down, I believe with Alan Lomax, I think he had some sort of overlap with these kinds of almost, what are they? These preservationists, these audio music folk preservationists. So he would go to these towns and collect their songs. He would collect sea shanties from fishermen. He would collect harvesting songs from farmers and work songs from seamstresses, and he'd write them down and he would sing them. He would bring them places and sing them, keep them alive. And something that utterly shocked him, it was on the level of the betrayal of the American Indian, as we I say we. Why not? Came and took over and pushed them to the side with our great big pickaxe, tossing beads hither and yon. The group, the Dubliners, I'll say this, use this expression that I do not like to use, but it's enjoyable from time to time. The Dubliners had the temerity to take many, many of the songs that they themselves had not written, old folk songs that all the folk bands were playing, and used. The Dubliners took those same songs and copyrighted them, took ownership of them, and then no one else could play them. And the Dubliners essentially, as we took over America, took over all these songs. That made Ewan McCall, I want to call him Ewan McGregor, why not? That made Ewan McCall very angry indeed. I'm sure he woke up every morning and said, I am very angry at the Dubliners. And I don't know the exact ramifications, whether other folk groups couldn't play this or that, but I believe that the Dubliners began to accumulate royalties and monies from these songs that used to belong to everyone. I don't think the Dubliners are agents of the devil. They were just savvy. Someone would have done it. Who wants to be angry at the Dubliners? 19 drunken men, one with a strange drum. So you are listening to us live on the Clutch and Wiggle Radio Network. The show also gets replayed on partyfm.com. I am terrible at remembering this. I was told that it's also on another Tunes and another, and I believe it plays in Canada. The triumph of it all. The triumph of it all. The desperate triumph of my triumphs. I'm foot stamping my way across continents. Let's see if we have anything else here. So I do, well, the microphone suddenly struck me in the face. George Foreman, sometimes struck by his grill. I simply wish to say that when I say I don't prepare, of course I prepare a little, meaning I go for a walk. I put a bit of music there. I think in my head, what else should I play? How about a song, two songs? So there is that. But what I mean is that I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I didn't know I would talk about bowling alleys or Ewan McCall. That's what I mean. There's no preparation there. And I wonder about that. Is that a mistake? I mean, the only way really to discover it would be to instantly follow this program with a completely prepared one. As though I prepared for the Radio Ghost 46, and that was coming up at the 10 o'clock hour, but from 9 to 10, it was a wing it. And then at 11, if there was anyone still left standing or alive, they could type in number 2 was better. Number 1 didn't make sense at all. What were you talking about? Who is Mitchell Mayne? Now, I don't like weather reports. Have I stated that before? I can't hear them. It doesn't enter my... If you have a weatherman and they... I am amazed at their shtick, how they can talk for so long about the weather and wind and humidity and the things that are moving about, how they can do it, how they can keep their minds focused on it. That's an astonishing feat to me. That I will watch the weatherman just to see that he can articulately move his way through an entire forecast with seeming fascination. But I was in the hospital recently, and there was a man coming down the hall wearing the hospital garb, and he was giving a weather report to a woman that was basically pulling him along, and he seemed as though he hadn't been outside for many months. And he had a very darkened face, dark eyes, and grim, messy hair, and fierce-looking figure. But I quite admired the way that he gave the weather for the previous day and the upcoming weather. He simply said, "Yesterday 48, today 23, tomorrow 17. Don't go out tomorrow." And I don't know if this was just his focus at the moment, but I thought, yes, that's the kind of weather report I can respond to. That's what I want in there. And then, as difficult as I find weather forecasts, aside from my mild obsession with their ability to do it, I am very curious about what it is like outside. So I go out in the morning and I feel around in the air. There's a period of time when you go outside if you don't know what the temperature is, and I don't know what it is. You go out, you can't tell if it's negative 15 or 50. It's about 7 to 10 seconds, unless the wind is blowing very hard and you can feel what it is. The wind really pushes it up on you. It's the insistence of weather. It's slapping you in the face. "Look how cold I am. Just look at this." Right in your face. But there's that curious 5 to 10 seconds where you just, I don't know what this is. What is this temperature? It's potentially warmer than I thought it. No, it's cold. It's terribly cold. Oh my Lord, I'm going to spend the entire day inside. Oh, I have to get all my enormous mittens, wrap myself in scarves. But another thing about the temperature, 17.2, you get a thermometer, it's too deceptive. It's not an accurate... It doesn't tell us what we really want to know, which is, what does it feel like? Am I going to be cold if I wear this? What do I need to do to prepare myself and protect myself against what it is? Because it can be 6 degrees, and if there's no wind, you could go out there basically naked. Maybe a sock and a cup of tea to keep your hand warm. So we really should. We should get rid of that as our currency, as our philosophy of weather, as the footprint upon which we build everything. Let's go to what we can all understand. One, a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is just deathly cold. It's the range of positive 10 to negative 80. But if the wind is blowing and it's positive 10 and it's blowing hard enough and there's a certain level of humidity, it will kill you dead in 3 minutes. So 1 and then 10 is 110 degrees. And then we know that If it's four, I can go out, and I don't need a coat. Three, I have to wear a light coat. Just a different arrangement. But seven can mean anything. Seven can be comfortable, seven can be miserable. So fix that. Fix that, O weatherman. Especially for those of us who have to sit on top of buildings with only three blankets. They're excellent blankets that we get here at the Three Blanket Club. They are. They're made by the people who made the Empire State Building. We are getting close, my friends. To the 10 o'clock hour check-in at the old C&W warehouse. First time ever I saw your face, that's it. First time ever I saw your face. Yes, it's very surprising. If you listen to a lot of Ewan McCall, especially his older things, to then discover that he had anything to do with that sweet 70s song. I believe he wrote that about Peggy Seeger as well. Well, my friends, if you have anything you'd like me to play, if you have any questions you'd like me to answer, you may ask. Some people write me questions on Facebook, questions, and they're not real questions, but I answer them with the best of my ability, never correctly. So if you have a question you don't exactly want to know the real answer to, you can send it to me at showandsleeves@yahoo.com or on Facebook and Twitter, where I'm Show and Sleeves in both slots. And I will do my best. Using what resources I have. I don't know the facts, I don't know the truth, but I can imagine them. That is what I offer. And I like to help. There are many of us in this world who like to help and who have no difficulty coming up with answers to questions about which they know nothing. But we like to help, so why not? And we also know that it doesn't really matter, does it? The 14th president. Why not William McKinley? Who cares? Abraham Lincoln? I don't think so. Why not William McKinley for 14th? Does it matter? Do you need to know? Is it life or death? If not, it's William McKinley and he wore a fine hat. He was the only president to serve 6 years in office. He didn't serve out of the White House. It burned down. He served out of a very small hotel, the Yorkshire. There was a lot of controversy because there were many, many English people who also stayed at the Yorkshire. There was some thought that he'd been co-opted by Parliament, by the Prime Minister, by the King. All right, my friends, I thank you for joining me for this, the 45th inaugural episode of Radio Ghost. Tune in next week when, well, perhaps I'll prepare and we'll see. If anyone can remember this episode, if next episode is very well prepared, you can let me know, compare and contrast 46 to 45, prepared to ill-prepared. Sandwich thrown together, sandwich made by experts. We'll see where we are. So thank you, Noah, thank you, Christina, thank you, Scott, often, Bob, who had to go. All of you out there in Canada. on the Tunes Radio Network, Party FM, far reaches of the... far reaches of the reach. Way out there is what I mean. But it is tired, and I am late. Always merry and bright to you, my friends. It's tired, and I'm late. The old frozen fire, turn out late. Tomorrow we'll slip through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sweep. It's tired and I'm late. Untie your candles, I just lit the skates. We're sitting in sleep at light, come dreams that we're sleeping right. But now it's time to swim.
Hit a ball now.
It's tired and I'm late. Your frozen fire, turn out late. Tomorrow we'll sleep through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sweep.